You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 13th of September, 2014, on Monocle 24.
From sassy cover girls and surreal spaceships to sultry fashion numbers, editorial and commercial insights from a respected and ever style-conscious editor, and some Paulista politics and carioca culture, it's a Brazilian newsstand bonanza. On The Stack today, we have our friend and the editor of a much-revered woman's title show us the fruits of her labour as we go through the brand new edition, cover to cover. We'll also get some top magazine picks from a professional print peruser. Plus, we leaf through the eye-opening delights of one of the magazine industry's largest markets and see what's churning out of the presses of Rio and Sao Paulo.
I think the weeklies are very important in Brazil because in Brazil, I think the weeklies, they're more important than newspapers, which is different from Britain, I would say.
All that and plenty more besides today on The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme with me, Tom Edwards. So it's a welcome back to The Stack, to one of our favourite guests is Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman.
So smooth.
Exactly. It probably will be down here from here. Penny, good to see you as always.
Thank you. Well,
let's start by talking about the new issue of Gentlewoman. I'm sure most of our listeners who are, you know, magazine aficionados, they've probably already seen it, but maybe just bring them up to speed. What are we most looking forward to in this new issue?
It's big. It's packed with women. On the cover is Robin, the Swedish musician, pop a phenomenon, who we've been after for a long time, which is feels like cause for celebration. And Marlene Dumas, Kirsty Young of Desert Island Discs, Vanessa Grigoriadis, who's the writer who penned the famous Gwyneth Paltrow profile that we'll never read in Vanity Fair, Shitozi Abe, who's of Sakai, the fashion brand, and then lots of kind of chatty conversations with a lot of actresses. We've got Kirsten Wiig, also Maddie Hill from EastEnders, which has been fantastic, and Stacey Martin. Those are all the kind of big chats. And then there's kind of quite a very, yeah, I would say quite a vivacious fashion section, a mixture of, God, I hate the word real women, but there's fashion studies with women who aren't models, let's say. And that's always a really tricky thing to pull off. So we've been working on that for quite a while and it feels quite fun, a study, a sort of semiotic study of posing. all the usual sort of neurotic sort of fanatical perspectives on fashion that you'd expect of us.
Okay, well, we'll talk a bit more about that later. Just on Robin, obviously Robin was in, I think, the very first issue,
is that
right? She was
on a list, yeah. You know, we sometimes do a kind of list of tips or a list of things to do with your hands or something like that. Well, she was in the first one of gifting tips, I think, which was in our first issue. And we've been sort of in touch. I met her by Skype doing an interview for Cost Magazine, which my colleagues at Fantastic Man produce, our company does. And I kind of knew I was going to fall in love with her because we had some friends in common and I'd heard a little bit about her, but it was just great. And I just knew that we needed to make more of our kind of exchange. So it was just a case of kind of waiting till we had the right balance. And it's great. You know, we had, is she now 73-year-old fashion designer on our cover in Vivienne Westwood last time. So it's great to have a 35-year-old Swedish woman with a completely different universe and perspective. So yeah, no, it's nice to get the balance going.
And that's the kind of variety, I guess, that your readership, the reason that they love the magazine. What about, just on the point of Robin, people say, you know, never meet your heroes because it's a different. What about meeting your heroines? Is that, I sense that she's something of a heroine for you. Did she kind of live up to it? There was never a time when you thought, it's revealed something that, you know, changes my perception of Robin as a performer, as a person.
It's so interesting that you mentioned that you could, there are some telltale things that you think, oh, don't do that during the course of an interview or the process of doing a profile, because it takes a long time, or at least you're in touch for a long time. There's one or two things that makes you think, oh, don't be one of those women, you know. And no, she displayed none of those characteristics. And in fact, we did a launch party the other night and she wouldn't get off the decks, and she was so friendly and kind of warm and forthcoming with all the people that attended. It was just the absolute antithesis of what you'd expect celebrity behaviour. But then, of course, she's never sort of positioned herself as a celebrity as such. And I think she sort of turned her back on, well, you know, in the 90s, she absolutely could have been. When she did Show Me Love, she was massive and could have started, I don't know, launching her own perfumes and so on. But, you know, absolutely felt that that wasn't for her. And I think what's interesting about her at the moment is she's got loads of releases this year and she's done this massive tour with Royce Cop. But I think she just feels that she's much more comfortable when she's kind of collaborating and doing lots of different projects with other people than feeling like she's kind of the sole author of her own kind of message. And I really enjoyed seeing that kind of generosity in real life, kind of meeting her on set. I mean, the morning after, I think it was Latitude, and she came off the set of Latitude. She must have got back to London about 4 o'clock that night, and she arrived on set and immediately was doing all her slow motion kind of signature dance moves. And it was just charming to see somebody so present and kind of luminous. Yeah, no, I defy you not to find her totally charming. She's wonderful.
Well, that's a great news story, actually, isn't it? When you've got a performer who's interested in performing, a musician who's interested in music. Exactly. It's a bit of a turn up. Just on that point, because I know that whenever you talk about Gentlewoman, obviously people are understandably sort of intrigued by your cover stars and the process.
Yeah.
Do you find that's a bit tedious by now? Does it frustrate you when people are like, oh, Penny, a new Gentlewoman. Who's on the cover? What was the process? Or it's limitlessly interesting to be asked that question?
I think maybe the thing is that it's important to choose somebody that bears that amount of scrutiny, and your relationship with them sort of changes over the time that you see them on the newsstand. Yes, and of course, to begin with, it's a surprise, hopefully, and then it's a surprise maybe the way that we've represented them and pictured them. But then you, of course, assuming that you don't sell out immediately, of course, if it's on newsstands for a couple of months, you go back and you notice Vivian, you feel maybe slightly differently about seeing that amazing portrait in the beanie hat, or, you know, Angela in the glasses or whatever. And I think planning a biannual, you definitely need to kind of plan for longevity and kind of a building affection. So sometimes it's even nice to choose somebody that you think maybe immediately people might think, oh, you know, in fact, you know, for all the kind of effusiveness around Beyoncé, there were one or two people who were thinking, oh, I never really thought you would do a kind of full-scale celebrity like that. And then you knew that people were kind of noticing all the other covers that were coming out, say on American GQ or whatever, which were much more raunchy and a world away from the kind of Dior woman that we'd represented her in. And I think the degree of difference and the kind of rationale of the choice becomes much, much more apparent. So, I mean, that's the dream. Do you tell me if that works?
Well, I think the numbers kind of speak for themselves, don't they? But then on that point, it's interesting. It's quite a... Do you feel it's a position of power, I don't know, a responsibility almost to, you know, in terms of that editorial process of who you choose? Because do you think, well, I could feature somebody, as you have done at times, maybe not quite the same profile, maybe somebody starting out in their industry. Do you sort of feel like you could be a definitive influence on someone's career, even in its early days, just because you may decide to feature them or not? Or do you not look at your cover stars in that way?
I don't see my role in that way. I don't sit behind my desk drumming my nails thinking of, you know, the power I could exert on other people. I don't want to make a star. I don't regard the magazine as a Svengali organism. But I think that there's some opportunity to make things right sometimes. You know, it's great to do Yoko Ono, the, you know, at one point who the press said was the most world's most hated woman, or, you know, to do a really beautiful portrait of Judy Murray, who's so been so badly treated by the press last year. And just, yeah, Judy Murray, you know, I think Adele, when we put her on the cover, she'd never had a women's magazine cover. I mean, God, she's been on every women's magazine now, but there was, you know, for perhaps obvious reasons in the media. And we discovered when she came over to launch her magazine, Robin's never had a cover, even in the music press. And considering the massive...
That's pretty extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, the massive contribution she has made, not just to electropop, but just kind of women in music, it's astonishing. And then, no, of course, it's not a sense of responsibility, but it gives me a great deal of pleasure to think that we would change things. And then you see online people thinking, oh, thank God she's had her cover. And you think, yeah, that's great. If we can do that, you know, what a luxury.
That's Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman, of course, and we'll be talking a bit more about some of these processes, maybe some of the what the future might hold for the magazine and for Penny a little later. Up next, though, on the stack, we're going to be joined by my colleague Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and we're going to be taking a leaf through some titles out of Latin America with a bit of a Brazilian flavour in particular, so stay tuned. You are listening to The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, my guests Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman and also Fernando Augusto Pacheco, Monocle's own, I would say, Latin American magazine aficionado, I think it's fair to say.
Indeed. Faye.
Let's start. You have an appealing stack of regional titles. We'll start perhaps with a few of the weeklies. Where shall we begin? You delve in and begin where you'd like.
I think the weeklies are very important in Brazil because in Brazil, I think the weeklies, they're more important than newspapers, which is different from Britain, I would say. So the papers in Brazil, they're read. I mean, the best-selling paper is like 300,000 copies a day, which is not a lot for such a big country. But for example, you have this magazine here called Veja, which I have to say, I don't like it, actually. But it does sell 1.2 million every week, you know. And in every single house, people subscribe to it. And I'm sure it's read by more people than just 1.2 million. And the only problem with me that I have with Veja, that is quite right-wing. But the thing is, they're clever. So if you read the magazine, you know, there's basically they cover everything. It's a bit like The Economist, but more populist in a way. Mm-hmm. And for example, this cover here is not the latest issue because, you know, I was in my travels to Brazil and then I bought this issue. So, for example, it was just like a case of a couple, I mean, who killed their child. It was a tragic case, you know. But of course, it got the attention of Brazilians. So, of course, this would be the main story for them. There's another reason why you have to buy Veja. If you want to look through, you're more than welcome.
Sure.
And there's also, Tony, I would give it to you, the Veja São Paulo, which is basically the guide for the city of São Paulo that comes together with the magazine. So even for someone like me, you know, I would say that I'm a bit liberal, you know, I don't agree with Veja, but I do buy for the guide because it's a very good guide for such a big city that is São Paulo, that we don't have like, we do have a time out São Paulo, but it's a monthly and it's more expensive. It's not as detailed as Veja São Paulo. So,
and is the listings fair? I mean, do they ensure that this stays a little bit more, I don't know how you'd call it, politically sort of neutral? Is the listings guide, it's different journalists or do they bring that same kind of slightly populist streak?
No, it's very different. I mean, it's, you know, if there's an art house French film that's going to be released in São Paulo, they're going to do like a big story on it. So I think they cater for different publics. Maybe that's why their sales are huge. And it's very interesting. It's a success story.
When you say that it fulfills the same role as broadsheet newspapers in the UK, do you mean that it also offers analysis?
Oh, absolutely. And they have a lot of, for example, if there's a political scandal, the weeklies are usually the ones who actually, you know, they investigate the case. And actually the broadsheets are going to follow the next day saying, as you read in Veja magazine during the weekend, you know, there's this big scandal in the National Oil Company. I mentioned that because there was actually in the last issue and everybody's kind of talking about that, you know. So I think they have quite a large budget as well, maybe even more than the broadsheets in a way.
Now, Faye, we've also got Carta Capital. Tell me about this. It looks like a celebrating a 20th anniversary. Is this the antidote, perhaps, to that populist note from the weekly titles?
Very much so. The Carta Capital is a bit of a leftist magazine. It's a centre-left magazine. Doesn't sell as much as Veja, for sure. But it's very interesting because, you know, they cover things that Veja will never cover. For example, in this cover, they did a story about most Brazilians, they want to reduce the penal age for it when you go to prison because they said that's going to be the solution for violence in the country. And basically the magazine is saying this is an absurd, you know, this is a very simplistic thing, even though 90% of Brazilians actually want the penal age to be diminished from 18 to 16, but the magazine is completely against. So they offer like a different vision for maybe a small part of the Brazilian population. But I really like it. And I like the design, you know, it's very clean and because Veja can feel a bit, you know, too much information.
Yeah, there's a lot of stock photography, isn't there? So does it mean that there isn't a sector of kind of news publishing that's commissioning its own photography?
There might be, so maybe they don't have such a large budget as I imagine, in a way.
Fernando, let's continue our meander. These are some of the weekly titles, maybe the slightly more serious end of the spectrum. But I know that you've got a number of other titles, in particular one which you promised to mention to me, which I frankly can't wait to talk about. Tell us a little bit about this.
I hope
one.
You don't get shocked. You know, by the way, those are not my favorite magazine, I have to say. I just want to show you what you can see in
so
a Brazilian news agent. So basically, we have a monthly magazine for women. I would say women because, you know, there's some stuff for men, but it's not very much covered. It's called Plastic and Beauty. Basically, it's a magazine about plastic surgery, and it's a monthly. And, you know, it's so funny. When you go to Brazil, you have Vogue, Elle, and you have Plastic and Beauty. You know,
so it's literally viewed in that sort of pantheon of you know, the big serious kind of fashion titles, the big glossies.
And it's very much on your face. Like, the tagline for the magazine is "the magazine that will change you." And and I mean, they literally will, you know, in a way.
It's
and
good.
It's quite tacky. I mean, as you can see in the cover, you know, at the same time it's tacky, but they have very important celebrities on the cover. It's not just any random model. For example, in this latest issue, they have Agatha Moreira, which is an upcoming actress on TV Globo, which is the main TV channel. And they have a lot of stories about, even the ads, it's so funny, you know, I don't know how you call them, but modelers. So after you do a plastic surgery, you have to wear some sort of special...
Truce,
exactly, to keep everything together. And there's so many of them. I mean, it's incredible. And it does show, does reveal something about Brazil, this culture, that for us, plastic surgery is something so normal. And so it's like, you know, going for a haircut.
We've talked a bit about that before. It's interesting, Penny, though, isn't it? I wonder whether this is a magazine, in your view, from a first kind of perusal, that could break those geographical bounds. Clearly, it caters to a very dedicated market.
Yeah, and also
in
a territory that's well known for extremely high quality cosmetic surgery. So clearly, that would be the place that would generate the kind of publication devoted to it. But the imagery is absolutely extraordinary. Now we know where Almodovar got all his kind of ideas for the kind of the skin suit, etc. I mean, there's just like non-stop sort of rather sort of undignified kind of onesies for people to wear, both men and women. I've never seen anything like it. But it's very focused, isn't it? It's not trying to sort of create a lifestyle around it and kind of imply that it would be a rich woman that does this or a particular community, etc. It's kind of relentlessly specific to the body in kind of quite a kind of astonishing way.
Surprising but compelling detail.
And that's the thing in Brazil as well, not only because I would say in other countries, maybe if you're a bit wealthier, you would do more plastic surgery. But I think Brazil is so widespread and you can pay installments that even a woman who lives in the favelas actually can do a plastic surgery. Just you see how common is.
Faye, the clock is against us, but very, very quickly, just before we go, just run us through the last couple of titles. I know you've got one or two other lifestyle magazines, some sort of directed more at the sort of female market and also some directed more to the male market.
Exactly. I'll go very quickly. Shouldn't say good, but we have another women's magazine that I really like. It's called TPM, which is actually, it's a abbreviation in Portuguese for PMS, and they did a joke on that. So basically, it's all about women, but it's a very different from plastic and beauty. You know, they're very, very much liberal. And they, for example, in Brazil, you can't do abortion. It's still illegal in some cases. In one of their issues, they said they have a lot of prominent women saying, "I had an abortion," you know, like very important actresses and politicians. So they campaign for some issues as well. And for example, in the last issue, you have, I mean, she's very pretty, clearly, but this wouldn't be the normal sexy cover. Her name is Mel Frankowiak. She's a very famous and respected journalist in the country. And she's not there because she has a good boyfriend or she's just a top model. You know, there is a clearly, and I think it's a very good magazine.
It's a bit more kind of substance.
Exactly.
To
it's not all about
news angle.
It's not all about plastic and beauty, you know.
not exclusively. Finally, before we move on, tell me a little bit about Junior. I wanted to ask you about this one.
That's a very interesting. It's actually a gay lifestyle magazine. But what I think is interesting, because in Brazil we never had, it's something still very recent to have a gay lifestyle magazine. But we had in the 90s a porn magazine called G Magazine, which was extremely popular. It sold more than 100,000 copies a month for a gay magazine in the 90s, which, I mean, we just approved gay marriage, but in the 90s, Brazil was still quite a conservative country. But a lot of footballers, they used to pose naked on that magazine, like famous footballers. And it was, even though it was a porn magazine, it broke a lot of barriers, but it's in decline. And now you have Junior, which is more something like Attitude or Tattoo, you know, the French magazine. Mm. So there's no nudity, it's just kind of lifestyle and gay rights
and
this
kind
of thing.
I guess it marks this shift of you know, the gay lifestyle magazines right into the centre. You know, it's a society that's much more at ease. Is that fair? Is that a slight generalisation still?
Absolutely, absolutely. Even though I'm sure there's some people missing the footballers naked on the front pages of G Magazine.
And presumably it's a publishing culture looking for niche sort of segmentation.
Absolutely.
Be interesting to see what comes up next.
We shall await with bated breath. Fernando Augusto Pacheco, thanks very much for bringing in this prolific stack of magazines from your neck of the woods for us to look at here on The Stack. I am here with Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman as we continue on The Stack, this time with a stack of magazines. Penny's choices now. Penny, what have you got? What have you brought with you today? Where should we begin our next little bit of magazine analysis?
Ah, well, I just thought I'd bring some recent things. I was at the launch of the Mag reading room at Vitsu this week, which Jeremy Leslie had put together, and was kind of interested to see his kind of appraisal of, I think the brief is magazines that prioritise reading, which sounds like a kind of a strange thing to say, but obviously it's an important point in terms of kind of differentiating the wheat from the chaff. But that was quite fabulous, and it was interesting to see how much he'd focused on truly independent, some quite nascent publications. Mm. I loved, sadly I didn't have one to bring in, but I loved Intern magazine from Manchester, and I'm desperate to kind of see more about that. And I thought I'd bring along Hot and Cool, which is a publication made by Alice Goddard, who's actually we featured in the issue of The Gentlewoman this time, just in terms of kind of what a kind of new generation of kind of very ambitious young magazine makers are commissioning, and the kind of emphasis on illustration and the favours that they're able to kind of call upon from fairly established photographers like Jamie Hawksworth and so on. It's kind of a really nice project. Let me hand you over.
Yeah, it looks good. And it's a nice blend of kind of almost sort of quite classic photography, some beautiful sort of portraiture, and as you said, some quite striking illustrations.
It is, and just I think they've got a clear sense of who they are. There's lots of pictures of kind of school and things, so they're not trying to kind of hitch their wagons to a generation that's older than them that isn't really going to give them the true kind of creativity that you know those image makers are making in their own careers. I think they're making their own generation of collaborators. I think that's quite exciting to see.
There's some bagpipes in here, always good.
Yeah, kind of, you know, spotted the real
politically resonant at the moment.
Oh
perhaps.
Yes, it certainly is.
Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't get into that. No, that's a nice. That's a pretty nice title. Nice.
Very
lots
ambitious.
Lots of glass, big sort of full bleed images.
Well,
really
the printing,
good stuff.
Yeah, really nice.
Just to pick up on what you're saying about that sort of, I guess it's almost an irony of talking about magazines that are actually about reading, lest we forget.
It was not an oxymoron. I'm trying to think of what the word is.
Well, it's something, and it's something that obviously Jeremy is a friend of ours here on Stack. We talked about often with him about, you know, this commitment to long form journalism, to proper writing. I sense then that you feel that is a part of the market that's still in quite rude health. It's quite robust. There's enough people who are committed to actually commissioning proper writers to write well and at length.
Yeah, well, it was really exciting to see. I think there's 20 publications in the selection, and more than sifting through the kind of product and judging what you think's the best, it's just great to see the ambition that it isn't just about a kind of sea of content, which is what the kind of internet would have you believe that people are producing with the budgets as they are. And you know, there still is the kind of desire to feel that you go the extra mile and make something really definitive and beautiful and timely, and it felt like it was. So and I thought I'd bring along the most recent, now it's number 22 now, but Werk, W-E-R-K, which is the Comme des Garçons publication. I think it's Theseus Chan in Singapore that makes it, but I just thought it was quite an extraordinary object. There's
I challenge you to
die-cutting around the
exactly
edges.
To describe exactly the appearance.
What is
of
it?
This.
It's kind of like as if you've kind of pulled a bit of kind of the soldering off kind of the Millennium Falcon or something like that. It's kind of big metallic block. And some really beautiful, strangely sciencey kind of imagery inside.
This is a thing of absolute beauty, isn't it?
It is, and it's a picture book. It's, you know, it's the opposite of what I'm talking about kind of extremely invested editorial layering and, you know, sort of graphic design inside a magazine. But it's also nice to see something that you can just sit and passively consume. And the idea of constructing a reading room, as Jeremy did this week, you know, it's really nice because it's the complete opposite from sitting kind of neurotically pounding away on your computer. It's that sort of sense of sitting back into a chair and passively consuming somebody else's perspective rather than seeking out the thing you already knew you wanted.
Yeah.
So, it's just nice to think about what reading might mean. There's a lot of discussion about that in our office at the moment because my colleagues are producing a magazine about readers called The Happy Reader. So we're trying to think about all the kind of
It's front and centre, yeah, of your thinking. And just on the sort of, I don't know, the contract publishing side, all these, you know, magazines that are produced for, you know, brands, we've seen a lot of them. They're getting into some interesting space in the world of fashion with, I don't know, some people would say varying degrees of success, thinking of things like Porter, for example. What's your sort of overall view on the state of that market. Doing some interesting things, maybe still a bit conservative almost by definition, or do you think there's enough that provide a sort of an antidote to that fairly considered, slightly conservative approach to dealing with fashion? Is there enough variety? Are they bold enough?
There's certainly variety, which means that there are good and bad ones. You know, I'd like to think, I don't produce Cost magazine, but I think it's really good example of a kind of, I suppose, a contract magazine and very ambitious. And I just think that watching the process go on, it's possible to make it really good, but it just requires a great deal more effort to kind of separate yourself out from something that's really just a magalog.
Let's end, if we can, Penny, by just talking a bit more about The Gentlewoman as we proceed forwards. You know, issue 10, we talked about Robin, your latest cover star, and the pleasure of meeting someone who kind of lives up to their billing. I just wonder, in terms of the magazine, though, and the production of that, do you feel that you're still talked about too often as a, you know, a pioneer in this sector? You've created a little niche for yourself. Would you have anticipated that by issue 10 you'd have some imitators or some bedfellows perhaps who are kind of trying to do the same thing and sort of pushing the envelope? Does it trouble you that in some ways you're still slightly regarded as a bit of a pioneering title when yet you've opened up this space, maybe that some others should have been trying to get in and occupy as well?
Well, I wouldn't say they're mutually exclusive. I would say we're still trying to be quite innovative at a point when we actually do have quite a lot of people copying us. And that's the challenge, isn't it? With a magazine, it's not like being a photographer. You know, I've worked for photographers before who are very heavily copied. You know, I worked for Nick Knight, and he would always say, you know, when kind of the crushing moment would happen and he would see himself really shamelessly copied, he'd always say, well, you know, I have to push forward and create now a project that's completely unlike that one and dream something up completely from scratch. When you're a magazine, you can't completely transform into something else. I mean, fashion's actually about continuity, sort of dressed up as innovation. It's not genuine revolution every time. So it pushes you to, I'm just lucky to be in an organisation that doesn't really want to repeat formats. Certain continuity runs through it, but yeah, no, I mean, come on, there's some people that have been inspired by us.
What an incredibly diplomatic way of putting it. And just a final thought then, as you know, the magazine goes from success to success, I mean, does it add a pressure perhaps? Do people say, well, hang on, look, we don't get enough issues of The Gentlewoman. Surely you could do more. You know, you could do a quarterly title, you could do an issue a month. Does that ever even enter your mind? Or are you just very happy?
Of course, we hear that all the time.
But are you happy sticking to your guns on this, do you think?
Well, we hear that all the time, and it's something we talk about a lot amongst ourselves. But I would say the pressure is more to just make sure that the magazine is always better. And that is unrelenting. And it means that it never really gets any easier in a way. And maybe I'd start to get a bit nervous if it did. Imagine if, you know, it could be the reverse, where people are asking you to make fewer. I'm not going to complain about the success of the publication. And it's a great privilege to be in such a sort of ambitious environment where everybody wants the same thing. It's very different from other kinds of organisations where I've worked before. You know, I came from museums where other departments don't want your project to succeed. Everybody's trying to sabotage each other's kind of moment. And, you know, actually I'm surrounded by kind of between 5 and 10, depending on what time of the season, people that just all want it to be brilliant and they're going to stop at nothing to make it happen. You know, who could complain about that?
I like to end on an upbeat note, Penny, as you probably know by now, and that is a nice optimistic note to end the programme. Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman, thanks very much for coming on The Stack.
Thank you.
And that does bring us indeed to the end of this 107th edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks in particular to my special guest today, Penny Martin of The Gentlewoman, but also to Monocle's very own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Also, many thanks to our producer, David Pleasant, and our studio manager, Claire Urban. Comments, queries, they're welcome as always at info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the very same time next week. Listen again via monocle.com or at iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, from me, Tom Edwards, until next time, it's goodbye.